This week on the Barag World Show, we talk about dealing with workplace anxiety and better handling email management. This week's show is sponsored by Proposify and Teacup Analytics. Hello and welcome to Barragwall.com, the podcast about all aspects of digital design, development, strategy, etc., etc., etc. It's the last episode. I'm losing it at this point. My name is Paul Barag. Joining me on this week's show is Rebecca Troth. Is that right, Rebecca? Troth?
Troth, yeah, that's fine. People get it wrong all the time. But Troth, that's right.
So I've got it wrong, is what you're saying.
No, what is it? We think we've got it wrong. We think it should be pronounced troth, like you've been betrothed.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. But I think that sounds really posh. If you get, Rebecca Troth. I'm like, no, that doesn't suit me at all.
Okay, then. So, Becky Troth.
Yeah, that's it. All right.
Okay. Marcus Lillington and Andy Clark. Hello.
Hello. G'day.
We haven't got Ryan today because he forgot about the podcast.
He's such a muppet.
The season.
We can talk about him behind him back. We can talk about him behind his back.
That would be a nice, mature thing to do. Yes. Or we could just say, never mind Andy. Never mind Ryan. We miss you deeply and be all loving and caring about it.
All of these things assume that he's going to listen to this, which he never would.
No
chance.
He's got better things to do with his life. So thank you for joining us, Rebecca, and stepping into Sam's slightly moist shoes.
No problem.
So how do you know Sam then?
I met him at the DeliverConf conference in Manchester.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Where is it you work and what is it you do? I'm guessing you're some form of product stroke project manager.
Well, I was, but that's kind of changed very recently. I'm now working at Ingenico ePayments as a channel manager, but it's still very similar in terms of I get projects and it's all very applicable, as you can imagine.
Yeah. So what's a channel manager?
Basically, I manage partnerships with other companies.
Okay.
For Ingenico ePayments and I help with events and things like that.
Sounds more account managerish to me.
I was going to say the same thing.
It is quite account managery, yeah. But it has mini projects along with it, which is why I find it exciting.
So what does the company do? Is it like a payment gateway?
Yeah, so Ingenico are one of the biggest payment companies in the world. If you ever go to Tesco or things like that, place like that, they're mostly known for their chip and pin pads.
Oh, okay.
But then the e-payment side, which is what I work for, has payment gateways online. So
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're an international payment gateway.
This is obviously at the edge of my knowledge. Can you tell? You know,
as well. Don't worry. I'm just lagging it completely.
It's like when you get onto things like payment gateways, I just start dribbling out of the corner of my mouth. It all seems very grown up. I think that's what it is. It's like this is handling people's money and encryption and important things. And I go, that's scary. I want to run away.
I think we are trying to make it less scary. I think that's why they've brought me in.
I
find it scary too, but I'm just like trying to make it fun. Payments can be fun.
Yeah. You're not convincing me of that, Rebecca. I'm sorry.
I'm trying to convince myself, I think.
Well, you're talking later, aren't you, about the gamification of checkout. I might get the giggles at that. Because that just sounds like crazy magic.
It is voodoo, yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing and hearing about that later.
Shopping can be fun, can't it?
Exactly.
Shopping, paying for things.
Most fun. Because that's when the money, you actually see the money leave. So I think that's why it's got a bad name.
Yeah. Well, it depends which side of the equation you're on.
That's true. If you're a merchant, then it's great times.
Because I love it. I sell a few, little courses and books and things online. And every time I make a sell, I get a little notification. And it's great because it feels like you're earning money for doing nothing, because you could be in a restaurant and suddenly you get this ping, you've sold something, and it's the best feeling in the world.
All my adult life, Paul, I've been receiving royalties for songs I wrote 35 years ago. How cool is that? Yeah, I can't remember. I think it was Carole King, a great songwriter from the 60s and 70s. She said, writing songs and getting paid for it is the only way you can earn money when you're asleep, or something like that.
Yeah, which is awesome. You must get to the point, and I know you've got to this point because I've heard you say this before, of almost taking it for granted a little bit, and then when the royalty payments aren't quite as high as you expected, you're a bit disappointed?
Yeah, I mean, now I'm to the point now when the royalty payments are so low, it doesn't really make any difference at all. But yeah, well, yeah, Paul, I've spent £1,100 for every £1,000 I've spent, £1,000 I've earned throughout my life. So yes, obviously.
Do you have any kind of residual income like that, Andy? I suppose you've got you're doing that at the moment, aren't you, with your style guide things?
Well, the style guide things should hopefully be on sale by the time that this podcast goes out, if anybody wants to go to inspired.guide, which is a great domain name, isn't it? I mean, I couldn't believe that there was a .guide domain name.
Ooh, wow. Anyway, there you go.
Yeah, no, so done that. So, yeah, those will be on sale, hopefully, by the time this show goes out. I sold books, obviously. You know, I still get the odd royalty here and there from people buying Hardboiled.
Of course.
Once in a blue moon. Smashing Magazine keeps sending me checks, which is nice. Once in a very blue moon, I'll get a royalty check for Transcending CSS, which I wrote in, 2005 or 6. The last one was about 75 cents US. Yeah. It was hardly worth cashing it.
Yeah.
I get those
probably
things.
Probably cost more to cash.
Yeah. But yeah, it is nice. I mean, that's one of the kind of holy grails, isn't it? To kind of make things that people keep buying, and then you don't have to get paid for the hours that you work. I suppose that's what it's about.
Yeah. I have a similar thing. I have a YouTube channel.
Oh, do you? You make money off that?
I say make money. I think I've earned about $5 over the past 6 months, and that's not enough for them to pay it out to me, so it just sits there.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
But maybe in like 30 years, they'll send me a check for like 50 quid.
It is amazingly misleading. It's all of these things. It sounds like, you know, I've got a reasonably big following, but, you know, I don't make, I mean, books, royalties for books, you know, I've never, you know, they're a few thousand pounds. But for the amount of effort that goes into creating a book, I'm never sure it's really worth it. But then I don't ever seem to want to give up on the idea of creating a residual form of income. It's like at the moment I'm creating an online course about persuasive design. I'm taking the workshop that I ran and turning it into a video course. And it's like 50 videos and hours of material, and it's going to take me weeks to create, and then I'll probably sell 3 copies of it. You know, but
the thing is, it's too niche to make millions. You need to need to be doing something that appeals to millions of people, I think.
Yeah.
That
well,
is
like
true.
You did, to be fair.
Yeah. I mean, or to use a kind of more up-to-date version would be something like Basecamp, where obviously every company in the world, or not even companies, and any group could use Basecamp to manage whatever it is they're doing. But if you... 37 Signals ended up giving up all their other apps and products, didn't they? Because it was the only one that was really kind of making any money. So they decided that we'll just focus on that completely. So you need to appeal to a wide audience.
It's funny, isn't it? Because you see so many people rave about, you know, or focus on this as a potential revenue stream, but it's really it's quite hard to make work. What I like which I'm really pleased with my business at the moment, is the fact that it's a kind of nice mix of stuff. I've got some residual income type stuff. I've got some client stuff. I've got mentorship retainers, which is a monthly ongoing stuff. I've got, you know, project stuff. I've got training. I've got advertising. And having a mix, I think, works quite well. I like that.
Variety is the spice of life, Paul.
Thanks.
And I'll think if I can come up with any more cliches throughout the show.
You're on a, yeah.
We'll turn them into t-shirts.
Yes. Do you know someone did that in the very early days of BOAG World when we were actually popular because nobody else was doing this? There was somebody decided to take all of the bizarre things that we've ever said and turn them into a range of t-shirts.
I vaguely remember that now you've mentioned it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Were and they popular? Do you still make money from them?
Well, we never made any money from them. They just went for it. And they did ask permission, which was fine. No, I don't think they got rich. But the best one was still the Hands to BOAG World. So essentially, somebody had took one of Marcus's big hits from when he was a pop star. And they turned it into a song about the podcast and about web standards and stuff like that. And it was brilliantly done, wasn't it?
It was
really funny. I'll have to dig it out somewhere.
It's out there somewhere.
I'm going to need to hear that.
It is. I mean, it's very dated now because it was the time when we were actively kind of trying to promote and push web standards, you know, as being a thing because everybody was still table-based.
It was 11 or 12 years ago.
Yeah, bloody hell.
Isn't it time to retire yet?
I bet this is the point where we say to Rebecca, 11 years ago, how old were you?
11 years ago, I would have been 13.
Shit.
Oh, God. Oh, you're younger than my daughter.
I was going to say, you are younger than my son.
Dear me.
At least you're old enough to drink, though, Rebecca, and we should talk
that
about gin.
That is a bonus. We should. Gin is my ultimate favourite drink.
Really?
It is my drink of choice whenever I go out. I might have had a couple this weekend.
Bottles?
Yeah. Yes. A couple of bottles of Bulldog, some Tanqueray, Bump Bay, you know.
Lovely.
Ooh,
I tried a Spanish gin this weekend called Larios, and it's 12 years old. And it's really nice. And another one that I can't remember the name of because I was probably too drunk. There you go.
Larios by that point.
Yes. But really nice. That's my recommendation for the week. Marcus's tip for the week.
Tipple for the week, Marcus. Tipple.
Tipple. Very nice.
Yes.
Oh, good.
My recommendation of gin for the week.
I think my favourite gin would be the Edinburgh ones.
That is nice, actually. That is nice. I'm going to mention Margaret River gin. There's a gin from Western Australia, which is called West Winds, and they do a few. And the Sabre one is really, really nice. If you find that in a bottle shop somewhere, very nice indeed.
Okay, noted.
Yeah.
I've got nothing to comment on this. I don't like gin.
Oh.
You like cider, don't you, Paul?
Cider.
I don't after this weekend, no.
Oh, too much was... Well, I had too much gin, so...
It was my friend's fault. I tried to stop, and he wouldn't let me. He honestly wouldn't let me. He's a bad human being. I've got awful friends.
I have a friend called Alistair. I don't know, I probably might have even said this on the podcast before, but he gets blamed every time. I mean, with good reason. He's the kind of person that you'll be walking out the door, and he'll hand you another pint, and it's, you know,
right,
one of those. Anyway, my son-in-law came home late one night to their house where they live, and my daughter said to him, "So, you know, why are you back at 11:30 or whatever it is?" "Oh, it's Alistair's fault," and he's never met him before until that evening. So, yeah, that's my little story.
There we go.
Well, before we get on with the actual show, we should just talk about Fast and Furious 8, which I went to see last week. Not as good. Not as good as Fast and Furious 7, Paul, which was the best action movie
I'm
ever made.
By this.
Mm-hmm. But you were in it, obviously. You took a bit of a Vin Diesel role.
You don't bring it up again. Is this Rebecca? They've decided that I look like a shrunken Vin Diesel.
Okay.
Yeah, see? See, delusional. Rebecca agrees with me. Carry on, Andy. Get it out of your system.
So it was actually a really good film. I can recommend it. If you get a chance, go and see it. But not as good as Fast and Furious 7, which was the best action movie ever made. But then we only have a few weeks to wait before we see you in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Shut up.
As well.
So my question, Andy, because I've never watched any of the Fast and Furious movies because I've taste. But if I chose to watch them, would I have to watch them from the beginning, or can I just dip in at number 7, for example?
I think you can probably dip in at number 5.
Okay.
You wouldn't miss out if you... I mean, you should watch them all the way through. There is a couple of howlers, but no, if you wanted to really cut it short, start at number 5. 5, 6, 7 and 8 are tops.
Right. I will take that under advisement. Thank you for your contribution. Okay, let's do our sponsor and then get into the discussion, because otherwise this show's going to be going on for ages. By the way, just so that everybody knows, Ryan is now back and is asking to be brought on the show. And I've told him it's too late and I've rejected him permanently.
Why don't we just make him do a penalty?
Yeah, I like that idea. No, to be honest, I don't want to bring him on because it was complicated enough getting this show started anyway over Skype and Zencast and all the other tools that he's missed his moment, I'm afraid.
I agree, Paul. That really got me worried. I thought you were going to try it then.
And
I got really depressed for a second.
No, I just think the editing, your job of editing this season has been bad enough as it is.
Yes.
I actually, it's not often I have sympathy for you, Marcus, but over that I have.
Yeah, last week's was a new low.
Yes, exactly. So let's talk about our first sponsor, which is Teacup Analytics. So just to remind everybody what Teacup Analytics is, it's a set of reports that sits on top of Google Analytics. So it takes Google Analytics and it makes sense of it and provides it in a set of really clear, easy to digest reports. Now, I thought I'd do something different as it's the last show of the season. All the way through the shows with the sponsors, what I normally do is I use their talking points to talk about them. But I thought just for this last one, I haven't actually asked their permission. I hope they're all right with this. I thought I'd share my personal impressions of using them. So Teacup Analytics is something that I've been using for quite a long time. And I think for me, it's been really nice because whenever I open Google Analytics, and I know everybody's different and some people are very kind of data orientated, but I open up Google Analytics and then I kind of stare at it a bit blankly and never really dig into it. And I know in theory the kind of things that I should be looking at because, well, you know, I am supposedly a professional and kind of understand this stuff. But finding what's actually useful is never particularly straightforward when it comes to Google Analytics. And it's always you have to use filters and all kinds of things that I don't get it. I find it a really difficult interface to get my head around. So for me, Teacup Analytics has been great for just getting answers to the questions I need answers to, because you go in, it's got a list of reports, and essentially all of those reports are of various questions that you might want to ask, and you might, you know, and you just go through, find the questions you want to ask, and you go from there. So yes, that's essentially, sorry, the reason I'm stumbling is because Ryan is now pinging me on flipping Skype trying to get on. He's desperate to get on the show. I'm just going to pause for a moment and I am going to tell him to go away because he just won't seem to give up. Sorry, mate. Too late. Recording already. There we go. Right. What was I saying? It's got all these questions which are really straightforward, and you can just go to the questions you need and love it. If I'm honest, I'm not a great fan of their branding. It's all a bit kind of a bit cutesy and a bit kind of, ooh, there's teacups everywhere, which isn't really my taste. But the functionality is really good, and I guess you can't reject an app just because you don't like the branding. although I do
Andy
regularly.
I usually do.
And I do actually regularly do. Yeah, yeah. I do it with apps. I can't have an iPhone app which hasn't got a nice icon. That's impossible. But anyway, these guys obviously really know their stuff. And you don't just get access to the functionality of the app, if that makes sense. I feel like you get access to their knowledge as well. There's lots of advice and stuff like that as well. So there you go. You can find out more about Teacup Analytics by going to boag.world/teacup. And thank you guys so much for sponsoring the entire season. That is absolutely awesome. Right, should we do some discussion-y stuff?
Let's.
So, Marcus, I was wondering if you could kick us off.
I could. This week's little talk is going to be entitled Don't Worry, Be Happy.
Okay.
After the song by Bobby McFerrin. This isn't meant to be a kind of glib, pull yourself together if you're depressed kind of thing. If you're depressed, you're depressed. But this is more if you're a worrier. I know that certain people on this show have suffered from depression in over the years, so I'm not trying to pick on that particular subject. But I do think I'm pretty good at...
not worrying.
Yeah, basically. I talked about this a few shows ago where I can't remember exactly what I was talking about, but it was a sort of starting point down this road, and I thought, well, it's the last one in the series, so I'll talk about that. Now, of course... I could be the luckiest person alive. All of my it'll turn out okay, it always does, could just simply be luck or fate. But we know that that's silly because I'm an old person, and if you can't be lucky forever. So I thought to myself, why am I able to kind of look on the bright side? And then I started thinking, well, why do people actually worry? And I thought, it's things like they worry about not being good enough, people won't like them, being talked about behind their backs, or letting other people down. And I basically, all of those things are about mostly to do with what other people think of them. And the actual reasons why people don't why people tend not to be liked aren't any of those reasons. They're kind of things like being lazy or unreliable or two-faced or lying to people, that kind of thing. So I guess what I'm saying is if you're not one of those things, if you're not lazy or two-faced, then you probably haven't got any reason to worry. All this stuff about not being good enough, people don't actually worry about those things. They worry about just being unreliable. Also, I think you need to recognize when things are good, because I think people tend to only kind of notice when things are bad. And things are good, generally, for most people, most of the time. This kind of recognizing when things are bad is something that only happens not that often. I guess you do need to be prepared to work hard. And in some cases, when things are going badly, you need to make difficult decisions and you need to be prepared to do that. But as I've just said, making difficult decisions should be something that only happens once in a blue moon. And even working really hard is something that you shouldn't be doing all the time. In my experience, anyway. A final point on this is don't revel in moaning and complaining. This seems to be a very much, I don't know, is it a British thing or not? But British people do seem to do a lot of moaning. It seems to be like the default thing. You know, it's like you come in and somebody, this was rubbish, and then that happened and it was awful. And frankly, that pisses me off. So what I try to do is try and find the positives in whatever somebody's moaning about, and I find that soon shuts them up. So, yeah, quite simple, really. Stop thinking about stop worrying about what other people think of you, and work hard and try and notice when things are positive, and chances are you're more likely to be happy than not. That's it.
For me, I think it's actually not about other people, because I have a lot of anxiety is something that I struggle with quite a lot, and it's not about other people. What it is with me, it's about my mind will run ahead and start picking apart scenarios that haven't happened. So, for example, let's say I've got to return something to a shop because it's defective, right? my brain will run through every potential scenario of what will happen when I get in that shop, right? So it will say, you know, it will presume that the person is going to be a problem, right? I then come up with, well, what would I say? How would I respond there? If they say this, what will I say? Right?
Yeah.
So I spend a lot of my life living in a reality that doesn't actually exist. Mark Twain said it really well. He said, I've had a lot of worries in my life, most of which have never happened. And that's exactly where I'm at. Now, what I found has been really helpful for the last few years and has seriously reduced the level of anxiety is actually, believe it or not, an app. An app you will be very familiar with, Marcus, because we're often mistaken for it, which is an app called Headspace. Have you come across this?
No.
Right. So often people go, oh, you're Headspace. No, that's Headscape. Two different things. But Headspace is a meditation app, and it has this whole section on anxiety, and well, you can basically select from lots of different, whatever your particular thing is, whether it's not sleeping, anxiety, depression, whatever, and positive stuff like being more creative and that kind of thing. And it takes you through different exercises. And the anxiety one I find is really good. And it's about just really a lot of the time, just stepping out of the way that you're feeling and recognizing when you're going down this cycle of whatever it is, you know, imagining scenarios that will never happen and that kind of stuff.
Mm.
So I personally found that really, really helpful. So yeah, it's that's the thing with me.
Mm, Sue does
I'm
that.
Sure Andy's got something to say on this subject.
Yeah, she's right. Yeah, no, it's, Sue does this. She's often just thinking about every possible kind of scenario, to the point where, you know, she spends a lot of the time, you know, not sleeping because, you know, she's just running through every possible permutation in her head. We actually did this thing because I was constantly saying to her, you know, there's no point in worrying. You know, worrying doesn't change what it is that's, you know, going to happen. So we actually set up. In fact, I wrote about it in a book. I used it as an example in a book years ago. But we thought about setting up this website. We should have bloody well done it. It could have been that residual income, which we called Worrisome. And basically, what happens is that people can go onto the website. They can, you know, browse through all the categories of things to worry about. You know, the bomb and Tony Blair and all the stuff. That you might be worried about, pay £5 a month and somebody else will worry about it for you. Now, it doesn't take away Tony Blair.
That's a brilliant idea.
It doesn't take away Tony Blair or the bomb or Donald Trump or whatever, but it's just, you know, you don't have to worry. Somebody else is worrying about it for you. And then you get a reminder at the end of every month that says, time to start worrying about Tony Blair again. And then you pay another £5. I'm sure we should have absolutely. We had worrisome.com at one point, which I registered, and we never did the bloody website. So, worrying's no good to anybody.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
But it's very hard to stop yourself if you're wired in that way.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you say that worrying doesn't help, but there's a part of my, I mean, obviously I agree with you, but there's a part of my mind that says, well, it means that when I go into that scenario of returning that thing that is defective, I'll have all of the answers already in my head.
Yeah, I've heard that one.
You know, and I will know how to respond in the right way. So I'm preparing myself for that situation. And the trouble is to some degree, I wouldn't want that part of my character taken away, because that part of my character in other situations is incredibly useful.
Mm-hmm.
For example, when I sit down to write a blog post, I can churn out a blog post incredibly quickly, or even a book. And the reason is because my subconscious has been working on that for weeks, you know, because it's been, running through ideas and it's been thinking about things in advance. So I never start from a blank canvas. So in some ways, I think we often focus on the defects of our personality, and we see them as bad things. But almost all of those defects have a positive associated with them. One of the things that I found really interesting, Stephen Fry a few years ago did a documentary on bipolar people.
Yes.
And that was absolutely, I don't know whether you saw it, Marcus.
I did.
Yeah. One of the things I found most fascinating is he asked all the people, he said, if I could give you a button that if you pressed would take your bipolar away, would you press it? And almost without exception, they said no. That, you know, for every down element of who they are, there is an up element as well, which is a really important thing to remember, I think.
I think in your case, Paul, you just need to recognise when what you're worrying about is a waste of time.
Yeah.
And when it's useful, yeah, do it. I think that's all it is. It's about, yeah.
Yeah.
There's one upside to me, and I think to everybody else, about me being here in Australia and not being confronted with Brexit every single day of the week, is that I have been moaning less. This goes back to Marcus's point. I've been moaning a lot less. And I think that, you know, the less that you kind of, I don't know, dig yourself into a hole, the better you're going to feel about things in general. I'm not saying that I'm never going to moan about Brexit again, but, you know, if you're just constantly in that kind of moaning, groaning cycle about whatever it is that is your pet subject, you know, mine being Brexit, then actually, to be honest, it doesn't affect your mental health in any positive way whatsoever. And the other thing I've noticed, I'm going to get myself into trouble here as a middle-aged white man, but have you noticed that the people who professionally complain on Twitter about everything from, I don't know, patriarchy or whatever, have you ever noticed they never moan at the weekends when nobody's watching? They only moan during the week when they're going to get maximum attention.
To be honest, I haven't noticed that, Andy, and I'll tell you why I haven't, is because I've kind of reached a point where it's about controlling what you're exposed to, which is what you were talking about with Brexit. I've actually gone through Twitter and I have blocked pretty much every word you could possibly imagine that feeds me with negativity.
Me too.
So as a result, I don't actually see the whole breadth and depth of what's on Twitter anymore. And that's had to be a conscious decision. And that's not a kind of, it's not that I'm ignoring what's going on in the world. I still know that we're on the brink of nuclear war and all of that, but I control the sources by which I receive that. And the degree to which I receive that, because you're right, being pumped with that kind of negativity the whole time is problematic. And it moves you towards a negative mindset. But anyway, we're spending quite a long time on this, and I want to get on to what Rebecca wants to talk about, because this idea of gamifying a checkout process, what the hell is that, Rebecca?
Sounds fun.
So it does sound fun. It is fun. So basically, in Jonico, we've teamed up with a company called Lucky Cycle to bring merchants a sales promotion tool. Uh-huh. Which sounds boring at this point, but it's called gamified checkout, so it can't be that boring. And basically what it does is when you check out normal, you might have a banner that says you have a 1 in 10 chance of winning the value of your basket back. So merchants will do this instead of giving you 10% off for a whole month. They'll say, okay, 1 in 10 of you have got the chance to win the whole value of your basket back. So that might, you know, make you want to actually say, well, I will get that extra pair of socks or whatever I was going to buy extra, because I might actually get it all for free. And then you pay as normal, check out as normal, and then at the end, because they've integrated with our payments gateway, you get presented with a game, and so you can have anything from like a Wheel of Fortune, a slot machine, just a gift box that opens. Basically, it's up to the companies, whatever they want to show the customers. And then they play this game, and if they win, their basket is automatically refunded to them.
Okay.
That's it, they've won. And then obviously there's the ability to share it on Twitter and Facebook. But yeah, the reason that I like it so much is because I can imagine getting to the end and winning. And
yes.
Yeah. But then you'd be like, damn it, I should have brought so much more.
I'm trying to wrap my head around that. I'm trying to think how I feel about it. What have you got any stats over conversion rates? Does it work?
It does work, yeah. So Lucky Cycle have been doing it for a while, and they, let me see if I can find some stats for you.
That's really interesting. And I'm trying to decide whether I disapprove of it. There's a part of
it. It is a bit mixed, isn't it? Because it's like gambling.
Because it's a kind of, and also, I mean, could you just ignore the game if you wanted to?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, okay. So it's not actually getting in the way of the checkout process.
No, it doesn't come until the very, very end. So after you've had your payment confirmation and your order confirmation, then the game will pop up and be like, "Do you want to play to win your basket back?" And then you click play, and if you win, then it gets automatically refunded because it's integrated with the payments.
Yes.
Gateway.
Yeah. So you can do that.
Manually refund it. But it says, tests by Lucky Cycle show that by adding gamification, merchants can increase the volume and value of transactions and boost conversion by up to 15%.
Okay. I like that.
It could become a form of gambling, though. I'm going to have another go to win. I'm going to spend £2,000 this time because I won last time.
Yeah. It's like 1 in 10. If I order something 10 times...
I think that's why you were thinking the do I approve or disapprove. I think that's the people could become addicted to it, maybe.
See, this is really interesting because I do a course. Well, I was talking about it earlier on persuasive design, and one of the sections we talk about is the efficacy of different things, and you know, obviously there are dark patterns which, you know, are particularly manipulative. What consists of a dark pattern and what doesn't. So for example, one of the things that they were showing was, somebody included a screenshot where, you know, one button was much bigger than the other because they wanted to push people to click on a certain button rather than the other. Now, I don't consider that a dark pattern. I think that's just a design decision. So it's a very blurry line. So the line that I kind of have come up with, which I talk about on the course, is that you shouldn't endeavour to get somebody to do something that at some level they don't want to do. So it's about persuading people to take action now and to take action with you rather than the competition. Okay. So in this case, it's like, I don't, you know, it's would it encourage someone to actually make a purchase that they wouldn't normally make? I don't know. Would it encourage them to make a purchase with you rather than your competition? Absolutely. So that's why it's a bit kind of, I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's an interesting idea. I like it.
I mean, and it was only launched about a week ago.
Right. It'll be interesting to see what feedback you get from it.
Definitely, yeah. And there are ways, I mean, there are games that are a lot less gambly, so like you don't have to use a slot machine. It can just be a gift box that opens and it's just a chance whether you get it or not, or a scratch card, which is still a bit gambly, but...
See, the other thing that actually... I think there is a situation where I would use it. Right. And this is how I would use it. And it's a weird way of using it. And it uses a psychological trick called reciprocation. And reciprocation is the idea that if I give you an unconditional free gift, right, then you are so grateful to me that you feel indebted to me in some way and you want to give back. So an example of it would be if MailChimp, right, that I send out my newsletters via, suddenly one day through the post, totally unexpected, they sent me a little kind of vinyl figure of their MailChimp logo person, right, Freddie.
Yeah.
Now, that was a free gift. Oh, and also there was a woolly hat as well in the shape of Freddy. Now, that was completely I had no idea it was going to come. And it was a lovely little surprise and it was wonderful. And so what I immediately did is because I felt, grateful for what they'd done for me. I put the little hat on my head, took a photograph of myself and put it on Twitter and said, thank you, MailChimp. Right. So and that was reciprocation. Now, that's different from offering a discount. With a discount, it becomes part or a free gift. You know how they sometimes say, sign up today and you'll get this carriage clock. You know, they always do that with old people, don't they? And life insurance. Yeah,
you get a free pen.
Exactly. So that then becomes a part of the transaction. The value of the pen or the carriage clock or whatever becomes part of the transaction. So if you use your gamification thing and you tell people up front you're going to do that, then effectively what you're, that becomes a part of the transaction. People do the calculation, or oh, I've got a 1 in 10 chance of winning this, which is fine. And that's a perfectly okay way to do it. But I think what I'd be tempted to do is just do the calculation behind the scenes, not tell anyone you were doing it or going to do it. And then when someone gets to the end of the checkout, you have a little kind of gift thing, which they click on, it opens, and you don't even show the gift box if they've not won, right? So they've already decided, you've already done the 1 in 10 chance, and just say, as a free gift, we've selected you to randomly get a refund. This is all for free. Share the great news with your friends on Twitter.
On Facebook and everywhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah, so and it has been made that it can be used like that.
Mm, absolutely. So it's all about how you choose to use these things,
exactly,
isn't it, really?
Mm.
Cool. I think that's really interesting.
Mm.
Cool. All right. Marcus, do you want to... Have we done you, haven't we? Andy, sorry.
So that's how much you listen to me, Paul.
I zoned out. I said quite a lot. I got quite into your section.
Yeah, I was really interested in that one. It kind of verged on like imposter syndrome as well, when you're worrying about...
Oh, yeah.
That's what we talked about, yeah, way back. I think, I think Sam spoke about imposter syndrome. But yes, no, I won't go back there because we'll run out of time. I was going to start talking about it again, but I won't.
So
steps
Andy,
away from the microphone.
What have you got for us?
Well, this entire season, I've been talking about books which I really like or would like to buy, and that, generally speaking, Paul Boag has universally derided. So we're not going to change that habit at all. So we are going to talk about a book, though, and because I'm old and I was looking through my RSS feeds yesterday, and a little blog post came up by my old friend Vela Peters. I love Vela Peters. She's one of these brilliantly talented graphic designers, web designers, that just consistently puts out amazing work. And, you know, she doesn't shout about it. She just writes these beautifully kind of understated blog posts about her process. And she's one of my favorite people, and she's one of my favorite designers. If you're not aware of Vela Peters over in Belgium, then you're missing out. Anyway, this blog post that she wrote was about some work that she'd been doing recently on this rather dodgy looking book, I've got to say.
Oh, it's superb. It is a really good piece of work. She's amazing.
She's been doing this this fabulous kind of cover and interior design work for User Experience Revolution, which is a book by somebody, I don't know whether you've heard of him. He's kind of, you know, he was there at the beginning of the web and has kind of faded away into obscurity for the most part. A guy called Paul Boag. And this book, User Experience Revolution, actually looks rather good. And I haven't read it yet, because I'm too tight to actually buy a digital copy. The print copy, apparently, ships, or will be starting to ship from Smashing Magazine by the time that this podcast goes out. But I'm too tight to buy one, and I've been waiting for somebody to actually slip me a free copy, which, I don't know, I think I'm too old
too.
And obscure.
Yeah,
and,
I think I could do with a free copy of that.
Out of touch. So nobody's actually... They used to send me books, you know, publishers used to send me books to review. I never reviewed them, but you know, I used to quite like getting a book in the post. That used to be lovely. Anyway, this one, User Experience Revolution, actually looks really rather good, and it's all about being an advocate in your business or in your company for user experience. And from the looks of it, it's got 9 chapters, which goes all the way through getting real about user experience design, whatever that might be, and about how to sell the benefits of user experience design in your company to create what Paul has called a customer experience evangelist, and then how to get support in your business for this approach for management, etc., proof of concepts, great working practices, and then how you can transform the culture of an organization to focus much more on having a vision for user experience. And I think that whether or not you're directly involved in UX, this should be a book that we kind of, you know, as design agencies actually give away to our clients. You know, because nobody else is going to read it.
So we need a box of them. Is that what you're saying?
We could actually do with a free box of them if you're out there, Vitaly Freeman, and you know, I know that you're going to have a warehouse full of these dusty books. So if you would like to send some to us, then we can give them away at our local school or car boot sale or to a client, perhaps, who might benefit from this kind of book. And that's my book of the week, User Experience Revolution by Paul Boag.
And I think that is possibly the worst of the entire season's worth of books that you've mentioned. It just gets worse and worse and worse every week. I mean, I thought buying some style guide from 1945 was stupid, but why on earth would you want to buy that piece of shit?
I've been nasty to you for the past few weeks on the old Paul Diesel thing. So I thought, no, it's the last episode of the season, so I thought that I ought to say something nice about you for a change.
Thank you very much, Andy. I'm very appreciative, and I've got to say, I mean, the design is just beautiful. She does such an incredible job, and I'm so grateful for her. And that's it now. Every book I ever write, same illustrator, gotta be. So there we go. And just so you know, dear listener, I have just pinged everybody in Skype with a copy of the ebook.
Yeah. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks. See?
Now, everybody who's paid for the ebook that's listening to this is now angry and resentful that you guys get preferential treatment. I try and treat everybody fairly and equally, but no.
That's okay, because I've just tweeted the link to the Dropbox.
My fee for the season, Paul. There you go.
Okay, yeah, no, that's fair enough. If you put it like that, that's a deal.
You've been underpaid.
Yeah, seriously underpaid. Okay, so everybody's talked about such interesting... Well, except for Andy. Everybody else has talked about such interesting topics, and now I'm kind of quite embarrassed about mine, because I want to talk about email. And just how... What a nightmare many people find email. Which I've never entirely got, because although I get a huge number of emails, I never have more than, I don't know, half a dozen emails in my inbox at any one time. And maybe a bit more, if I've been particularly busy. I think a lot of it, some of it is about how I approach email and my working methodology in terms of I tend to use inbox zero. So I process my emails and move them out of my inbox. And I tend to only check email 3 times a day, that kind of thing. But setting all of that aside, I think a big part of it these days is the tool that I use. So I wanted to quickly talk about the email client that I use these days, which is one called Polymail. Now, Polymail is a multi-platform tool, so you can use it across a number of different platforms. I don't know all of them, but I certainly know you've got them for the Mac and iOS and stuff like that. It's got a number of nice features that I really like. The first one that I find really useful is the fact that when an email comes in, you can kind of process it immediately. So you can instead of going, I can't deal with that now, and it just sits in your inbox, you can say, I can't deal with that now, hide it from me and show it to me later. So you can easily set it to show it to you later today, this evening, tomorrow morning, tomorrow evening, this weekend, next week, next month, whatever, right? So, which is really useful for kind of keeping your inbox clean and tidy and knowing where you stand with stuff. So that's one thing I really like about it. Another thing that's really cool about it is you can have a send later feature. So one of the problems with email I often find is if you send reply to an email, you get an email, right? Every time you send out an email, it just generates another one in return. So sometimes it's like, sometimes, for example, over this bank holiday weekend, I've actually wanted to send some emails, right, to clear my email, but I've actually delayed sending them until this morning. And the reason being is because I didn't want to get a reply that weekend. And also, to be honest, I didn't want other people to have to deal with my emails over the bank holiday weekend. So that's quite a useful one, a send later feature. Another one that I really like is that it's got associated tracking with it. So what that means is that you can see when someone has read the email, and you can see when someone clicks on any of the links in the email, which is really useful for just knowing whether someone has actually received it or not. You know, when it's people take a long time to reply, which is fine. I mean, I understand that. But you do begin to go, has it ended up in their spam filters, et cetera, et cetera. So this means you at least know that they've looked at it, which is a great feature. So it's got all of these different really useful features. Probably the last one that I really quite like is it provides you with a little panel of interactions with a particular person. So it kind of pulls in their picture and that kind of stuff. But you can see all of the emails that have ever gone back and forth between you and a particular person. And you can see all the attachments that they've sent you as well, which is really useful. So it's got some really nice features in it. I just find a lot of other email clients don't do quite as well. It's not perfect. It's a little bit buggy at times, especially the Mac version. I found you need to clear its cache every now and then, whatever the hell that means, in order for it to update properly. But generally speaking, it's a really robust, good email client that you know integrates with most email systems. So it's definitely. Oh yeah, and there's one last feature I really do want to mention, which is it's got email templates. So for example, every week I get hundreds of emails through from people going, can I write a guest post for your blog? Hundreds is an exaggeration, but I get a lot. So every time I want to write back and say, no, we're not accepting guest posts. It's not how we operate, but you can do a sponsored post if you want. And I'm saying the same thing every time. So now I can just select one of my templates, and it automatically would just send that off to them, which is really useful. So it's got some great features and it's worth checking out.
I tried Polymail when it first came out, and everything was great apart from the interface, because everything was too small for a old blind person like me.
Right.
One would hope they've updated that. Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know is the honest answer to that, because, you know, I'm not blind.
Well, you are blind, but in a different way.
Yes, I'm blind in a different direction.
Yes, exactly.
You'd have to try it and see. Yeah. I'm just having a look. I don't know. Give it another go. It's come on quite a long way, to be honest.
I haven't got a problem with Apple Mail. It's all right. It sort of does the job.
Me too.
Well, yeah, and that's fine, you know. Mm. Andy, what do you use?
I use Apple Mail, except now that I'm a corporate shill, I have to use Outlook on my Mac.
Ooh, nasty.
I know, which is a very nasty thing. But, you know, that's what happens when you take a job, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rebecca, what about you? What do you use?
I use Gmail mostly for personal emails, but since being at Ingenico, I've been given a Dell with Windows and Outlook on it.
Ooh.
I know, it's offensive.
Ooh.
So it's not even just Outlook on a Mac, it's Outlook on Windows. But no, Gmail mostly. I love Gmail. It's my fave.
Do you have any of those electrical testing stickers on your laptop? Do they have to come round and make sure that your laptop's safe and they stick one of those kind of like silver foil stickers on your laptop?
I don't think so.
Mm. Yeah, they only have to go on the plugs over here, Andy. Now you've moved to Australia. It might be different there.
No. I've seen it. I've seen council workers on trains that have got half a dozen of these things. I saw one bloke once that he hefted this huge, massive-looking Lenovo or something out of his bag on a train. And I swear to God, the thing had about 8 different, like, annual stickers on it. And when he opened up his laptop, it booted into Windows NT or something like that. Rebecca has no idea what we're talking about, by the way. Windows NT. No clue. Not a clue. Nope.
Never heard of it.
That's incredible. Anyway... Let's wrap this baby up. I just want to talk about Proposify, which is our second sponsor. And again, I want to share some of my personal impressions of Proposify. So it's a simpler way to deliver proposals to your clients is the idea. And it's a tool that I actually used for many, many years. And I admit, actually, I don't anymore. But I don't think that's a reflection on the app so much as on my own requirements and my own needs, because to be honest, Proposify would be a little over the top for me because I don't have to produce that many proposals. But that said, there are actually quite a lot of functionality that I really miss that I don't now have. So for example, Proposify had some really good analytics, you know, in terms of how many times people had viewed your proposals, what they'd looked at, you know, whether they'd open the email that went with the proposals, all of that kind of stuff. So they've got really good set of analytics for knowing how things are going with the proposals you've sent out. The other thing I really liked about them that I've not been able to quite replicate anywhere else is they've got this really powerful content library function. So almost a bit like the pre-done messages I was talking about with Polymail a minute ago. So you can kind of take different bits of copy that you reuse from one proposal to another and keep them in this like content library that you can then just drop in really easily. And the great thing is you can even have like placeholders. So within those content libraries where it will then replace that placeholder with the name of the current client. So you know how you always get into that thing where you copy and paste stuff from one Word document into another and you end up sending the new client with the old client's name in the proposal. So it avoids that kind of problem, which is really good.
Never happens with me.
I'm sure. Never. Never. You're infallible, Marcus.
Totally.
Exactly.
Although I've just got to say that if there was a way that I could somehow tag and label all of the bits of proposals that I've written over the last 15 years, that would be fantastic. I just have to kind of rely on my memory and just go back through looking at different, you know, different folders that have been labeled with whatever the client was and go, that was about such and such. So I can pull from that. But to be able to reliably do it would be amazing.
Yeah. I mean, the big problem you would have is you've got 15 years of material to put into Proposify.
Yeah. It's not going to happen.
In principle, if you had a week to organize yourself, it would be worth doing, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But nobody ever has that week, do they? The other thing it's got, which I really like, is it's got an iOS app. And I do miss that just for kind of seeing what's going on with the proposals and being able to grab the links and that kind of thing. And they've got a really good level of integration. They integrate with pretty much anything you can imagine, from CRMs to content management systems to accounting software, whatever. And that's really useful. But for someone like me who rarely creates proposals, these probably aren't enough to make me go back to it. But if you write a lot of proposals, or you have a team in particular, if there's more than one of you writing the proposals, then I just think it's probably the best tool out there for those kinds of situations. It is absolutely stunning. So you can find out more about it at proposify.biz/BoagWorld. All right. Well, I think that about wraps us up for this show. Marcus.
The season, final Paul. Joke.
The season, yeah.
I can't believe this is the last one. This is possibly the last time that I'll ever speak to you, Paul.
Yeah, because we only speak professionally.
but Andy, you can come on to one of the shows next season. There you go.
Thank you, darling.
Well, actually, Andy, there are two shows where Marcus is away, so perhaps you could become my co-host.
Oh, I would love to. Count me in.
On that subject, on the subject of next season, I have asked those people in the office this morning if they'll be up for doing a talk, and they all said yes. Even Chris said yes.
Wow.
He didn't like... I made him say yes, but he did say yes.
So, Rebecca, are you going to do a little talk for us next season? Putting you on the spot?
Yeah, excellent. I'll do it. I'll do anything.
So the way that it works is essentially we're going to do a whole series of little lightning talks. So people pre-record talks on whatever they want to talk about. And I'm guaranteeing that I will publicize and promote every single talk I receive, presuming it's not offensive or wrong or inaudible. But, you know, basically I'm going to include everything. 45 of them we will actually include on the show itself. If I get more than 45, which to be honest is extremely unlikely, but if I get more than 45, then I'm going to post the rest on my website. So there'll be all of them will be included. You can find out about how to do it and the process of submitting it, which is really straightforward, by going to boag.world/season18. And if you've got any concerns about it, any worries, any issues, just drop me an email at paul@boagworld.com and I'm happy to kind of help you because I want as many people as possible to do this. So it's going to be awesome.
It's going to be great.
Yeah, that sounds really good.
Yeah, I reckon so. And I want people that don't do this kind of stuff as much to do it, you know, that maybe I've kind of always fancied the idea of talking at a conference, but it also terrifies them in equal measure.
Is it just sound that you're going to do?
Yeah,
just sound. Cool.
So which doesn't make it. That's the tricky part. No slides, but I guess you can have slides, but we won't be showing them.
Yeah,
and Paul and I won't be judging the talks in any way, shape, or form at all.
No. The only thing I'm thinking about
that,
doing.
Yeah.
The only thing I'm thinking about, you were joking, I'm not going to. I'm determined. I want to do nothing but encourage
people. We will be discussing them, talking about them in between.
Yeah.
That was a good point. Well made and things like that.
I'm only going to say positive things about all of them.
Have the equivalent of a swear box, Paul, when you say something that isn't positive.
Every person, if I happen to say something that Marcus considers negative about your talk, then I have to send you a copy of my ebook.
Excellent.
There you go.
That's a great idea. Yeah.
So I will only say positive things about it and pick out the bits I like. The only way I may be indicating that one is better than another, I'm going to have what I call a keynote presentation. So we got three talks each season. Each episode, and one of them will be the keynote, which is one I've picked out. And the reason I'm doing that basically is because I want to name the show something. So I have to pick out one for those purposes. But other than that, they're all the same.
Is there any restrictions on how many times people can send talks in?
No, send as many as they want if they want to do multiple, because I'm so sure I'm not going to meet my 45 that I will keep accepting.
So you've got like 20 people to send two in and then the rest you'd just fill in with your own talks.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So, and if I do by some freak get more than 45, I'll make sure that people who submit two talks only get one on the show and the other one will just go on the website instead. But I mean, I have to say, the website gets almost as much traffic as the podcast anyway. So, you know, it swings and roundabouts in terms of exposure. So, yeah, I'm excited. Be good.
Yeah.
So, Marcus, you got a joke to wrap us up with?
I have. This one's from Ian Lasky, long time no here.
Oh, good.
Right. I called the RSPCA today and said, I just found a suitcase in the woods containing a fox and four cubs. That's terrible, they said. Are they moving? I'm not sure, to be honest, I said, but that would explain the suitcase.
Oh, good one.
Took a while, Andy.
It did, but it didn't sink in for me. It was a Skype lag, mate, that's what it was.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, Andy, where can people find out more about you?
People can find more about me, actually, on Twitter at the moment, @malarkey is the best place to get me.
There we go. Rebecca, what about you?
Twitter again, @RebeccaLtross.
Okay, and Marcus?
Headscape.co.uk and very occasionally Marcus67 on Twitter.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you very much Rebecca, for joining us on this week's show. And
thank you for having me.
All of our regulars that have supported this season in such a lovely way. And for you, dear listener, it's been a good one. It's been a good one. Despite our audio battles, I think we've covered some good stuff over this season. But I am really excited for next season. Oh, now, professionally, I should have been ready to say when that's going to be. But I wasn't. Hang on a minute.
It's sometime later, a few weeks' time.
Oh, well, it's a really easy one to remember. The show will return on the 1st of June. So there we go. So, we're going to have a couple of weeks or a few weeks off, and then we're going to be back with our Lightning Talk season. But until then, thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Oh, my God.